You've been quiet for a while there, Speaker Two. Something on your mind? You're staring at that screen like it holds the secrets of the universe.
Looks up, sighs. In a way, it does. Or at least the secrets of our future. I've been reading this chapter on AI used as a means of surveillance. It starts with that classic Orwell quote, "Big Brother is watching you," and honestly, it feels less like fiction and more like a documentary now.
AI surveillance? I know it's a big topic, but is it really that bad? I thought the whole point of AI was to make our lives easier, more convenient.
That's the promise, isn't it? To make human life richer and more convenient? But this text argues that the reality is far darker. The technology isn't the problem itself, but how it's being weaponized. It's becoming a tool for mass surveillance and control, seriously threatening our basic dignity and freedom. It specifically calls out systems like Israel's Lavender and China's Skynet.
I've heard those names, but I don't know the details. What makes them so dangerous?
The author outlines four common characteristics that are really chilling. First, they collect massive amounts of our personal data, almost always without our consent. Second, the algorithms are black boxes. They operate opaquely, so we have no idea how they're making decisions about us. Third, they make life or death decisions, even though they have a known potential for error. And fourth, they're often misused to conduct discriminatory surveillance against specific ethnic or social groups.
Wow, each one of those is a major red flag on its own. The lack of consent is bad enough, but an opaque algorithm making critical decisions, that's terrifying. You can't appeal a decision if you don't even know the rules. It's a fundamental human rights issue, isn't it? Privacy, freedom of expression, all of it.
Exactly. And it's not just a problem over there. The text mentions that even in South Korea, the National Human Rights Commission is pushing for an AI human rights impact assessment for new projects. The concern is universal. The core question this chapter poses is whether AI will be a tool for our liberation or our oppression. And the answer depends on what we do right now.
Okay, you've got my full attention. Let's start with the first one you mentioned. What is this Lavender system?
Right. So Lavender is an AI system developed by an intelligence unit of the Israel Defense Forces, the IDF. It was exposed in April 2024 by a couple of investigative outlets. Its purpose is to process huge amounts of data from Gaza to rapidly identify suspected Hamas militants.
So it's a targeting system. How does it work?
It gives every person in the Gaza Strip a score from 1 to 100 on their likelihood of being a Hamas or Islamic Jihad operative. It learns the patterns of known militants, their phone contacts, the apps they use, where they go, and then it looks for other people with similar patterns, sequentially expanding its web of analysis. It's a simple concept, but the implications are horrifying. Your life or death can be determined by a numerical probability score assigned to you by a machine.
A score? That's so dehumanizing. It reduces a person to a data point. What kind of accuracy are we talking about here?
The IDF claimed 90% accuracy in the early stages of the war and authorized its full-scale use. But think about what that means. A 10% error rate. The text says Lavender designated up to 37,000 people as potential targets. A 10% error means 3,700 of those are innocent people. 3,700 innocent lives on a kill list generated by an algorithm.
That is unbelievable. And I assume there's a human in the loop to check the AI's work, right? There has to be.
There was supposed to be. Before the war, a human needed at least two pieces of independent intelligence to confirm a Lavender target. After the war started, they relaxed it to just one. But in practice, sources confessed it became a rubber stamping process. An analyst would spend just 20 seconds to approve a target. The human was just a formality. The AI was effectively making the kill decision. One officer is quoted saying, "Saving money, time, and manpower was far more important than civilian lives."
20 seconds to decide to end a human life? I have no words.
It gets worse. There's another system that works with lavender, and its name is just, it's monstrous. It's called Where's Daddy.
You're kidding me. Where's Daddy? What does it do?
It's a tracking system. Once lavender identifies a target, Where's Daddy tracks their movements constantly and it'll learn their patterns. Its specific function is to detect the exact moment the target enters their family home and then alert the military for an attack. An Israeli officer literally said it was much easier to attack them in their homes.
So they're not targeting them on a battlefield or in a military facility. They are deliberately waiting until they are home with their families, with their children.
Precisely. Bombing the target at home means the entire family, spouses, children, relatives, are all sacrificed to eliminate that one person. It's a complete and utter violation of the principle of civilian protection under international law.
And the collateral damage, they must have calculated that.
They did. The text cites testimony from 6 intelligence officers. In the early weeks of the war, the IDF accepted between 15 and 20 civilian deaths for the assassination of a single low-level militant marked by lavender. For a senior Hamas commander, they tolerated the deaths of over 100 civilians.
100 civilians for one person. An international law expert quoted in the article said they'd never heard of such a high ratio, especially for a low-level target. This wasn't an accident. It was pre-calculated and accepted. It was policy.
Yes, and on top of all this, Israel deployed widespread AI facial recognition in Gaza. They use tech from a private company called CoreSight, which claims it can get an accurate ID even if less than 50% of a face is visible. But it made mistakes. The text tells the story of a Palestinian poet, Mosab Abu Toha, who was misidentified by the AI at a checkpoint while fleeing with his son. He was detained for 2 days and tortured.
So the technology is flawed, the oversight is non-existent, and the rules of engagement are barbaric. This isn't a surgical tool of war. It's a blunt, automated instrument of mass killing. It's the perfect storm of technological overreach and moral collapse.
Exactly. It's a stark warning of what happens when AI is used to strip away humanity, turning people into scores and collateral damage statistics. And while this is a military application, China's Skynet system shows how similar principles can be applied to control an entire civilian population.
Right. Skynet. I feel like I've heard that name in a movie. How does it differ from Lavender?
Fundamentally, Lavender is a tool to eliminate targets. Skynet is a tool for universal day-to-day control of 1.4 billion people. The name comes from the Tao Te Ching. Heaven's net is vast. Though its meshes are wide, it misses nothing. It's meant to imply that no one can escape the state's watch.
That's an ominous name. What are the nuts and bolts of it?
It's a network of over a billion CCTV cameras. The government boasts it can scan the entire population of China in a single second. Their facial recognition tech is world-class with 99.8% accuracy. But it goes beyond faces. It can identify you by your gait alone. The text gives examples of criminals being caught years later, like a man spotted in a concert crowd of 50,000.
I can see the argument for catching criminals, of course, but the potential for misuse is staggering. To have every public space blanketed with cameras that know who you are and how you walk, that eradicates any concept of privacy.
And they're upgrading it. A project called Sharp Eyes aims to connect all the public CCTVs with residents' private devices, their TVs, their phones. It creates a society of mutual surveillance where citizens are encouraged to monitor each other. It's an all-encompassing net.
So where does this tech show up in daily life?
Everywhere. Jaywalkers are shamed by having their faces put on public screens. You can pay for the subway with your face. Facial recognition is used for school attendance, hotel check-ins, and even to dispense a set amount of toilet paper in a park to prevent theft. Since 2019, you have to get your face scanned to get a new mobile phone number.
They're building a massive, government-owned biometric database of every single citizen. And they're linking it all together with their online activity, their shopping habits, their travel.
Correct. And it's all fed into systems like the social credit system. The most extreme application of this, according to the text, is in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. They've installed millions of cameras and are collecting biometric data, DNA, fingerprints, iris scans from residents as young as 12.
They're treating an entire ethnic group as pre-criminals.
It seems so. An intelligence platform called iJop tracks people, and the reasons for detention are terrifyingly mundane. Things like studying the Quran, having a long beard, or even just repeatedly turning off your phone can get you sent to a camp. The text even mentions reports that companies like Huawei developed a Uyghur alarm for their camera systems that would automatically alert police if it identified an Uyghur person.
That's not surveillance. That's automated persecution. It's apartheid. But
hey, have you been following the news about Palantir and these advanced surveillance technologies? It's really something straight out of a sci-fi novel.
I have, and honestly, it's pretty unsettling. I mean, Palantir's name itself, from The Lord of the Rings, a magical seeing stone, it's almost too on the nose for what they do.
Exactly. Founded by Peter Thiel, and their core business is essentially integrating and analyzing massive amounts of data from all over. We're talking satellite images, phone records, financial transactions, social media, government databases, all analyzed in real time. It's like they've built a giant digital brain monitoring the world 24/7.
And they have two main platforms, right? Gotham for government agencies and Foundry for private companies. Gotham sounds particularly potent given its use in military operations, counterterrorism, and criminal investigations. The digital chessboard nickname is chillingly accurate for strategic decisions.
It really is. Think about Gotham's features: signal intelligence for electronic communications, human intelligence integration to cross-reference informant reports with other data, geospatial intelligence for real-time changes from satellite and drone footage, and open-source intelligence to gauge public sentiment from social media. That last one about collecting and analyzing Facebook or Twitter posts in real time to assess political atmosphere or unrest is a huge concern for civil liberties.
Absolutely. And then there's Foundry, specialized for businesses. It can simulate and integrate a company's financial, HR, logistics, and inventory data. It just shows how pervasive this technology is, moving from national security into corporate oversight. Remember that JP Morgan case where they tried to use Palantir to monitor employee misconduct? They apparently used it to pry into executives' private lives, and the contract got canceled.
Yeah, that example is a clear warning. It highlights how easily technology designed for one purpose can be repurposed for something far more invasive. And then there's Palantir's involvement in the Ukraine war, providing their software for free, essentially using it as a testing ground to refine their tech in a real-world conflict.
It was a strategic move for them, providing valuable data and experience. Alex Karp, their CEO, even said their AI system is responsible for most of the Ukrainian military's targeting. The Economist calling it David's slingshot against Goliath speaks volumes about its effectiveness.
It does. But the flip side is that technology that identifies and tracks enemy forces on the battlefield can, with slight modifications, become a tool for governments to monitor and control their own citizens. The contract with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to track undocumented immigrants is a prime example of its potential misuse against vulnerable populations. Over 200 Palantir employees even signed a petition against that contract.
That's a strong internal dissent, showing that even those working on the technology recognize the ethical dilemmas. And the international expansion is just as concerning. Palantir has contracts with over 40 countries. Governments adopt this under the guise of counterterrorism or public safety, but once these systems are in place, their scope often expands.
Exactly. It shifts the balance of power. Historically, citizens could monitor the government through free press, assembly, and expression. But with powerful surveillance tech like Palantir in government hands, that balance collapses. The government can monitor citizens in real time, while it becomes harder for citizens to know what the government is up to. The watcher and the watched roles are reversed.
And internationally, the spread of Palantir means the U.S. is effectively forming a digital surveillance alliance with its allies, standardizing surveillance technology globally. It's a dangerous union of technology and political power. Peter Thiel's close ties to the Republican Party and Donald Trump mean we can't rule out this technology being used for specific political factions.
Right. And their market capitalization topping traditional defense contractors like Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, it really shows how software-based surveillance is now valued higher than hardware-based defense. It's a sobering thought. This whole scenario with Palantir really shouts out that technology isn't neutral. It can either liberate or oppress, depending on how it's used.
That's where Edward Snowden's revelations come in. Even a decade ago, with the NSA wiretapping 35 world leaders, including Angela Merkel for 10 years, and accessing servers of Google, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft through Prism, it was a stark reminder of what governments are capable of.
And after Obama's apology, do you really think U.S. intelligence agencies have stopped? I doubt it, especially with the dramatic advancements in AI. The NSA used to collect vast amounts of data. Now AI to analyze and predict from that data in real time, faster than any human.
That's the scariest part. AI algorithms can process years of human analysis in minutes. They can instantly identify political leanings, critical opinions, and map entire contact networks from emails, social media, and call records. And it's not just about what you've done, but what you might do. Predictive surveillance and behavioral analysis are here.
And facial and behavioral recognition systems. With CCTVs, drones, and satellite imagery everywhere, combined with AI, we have powerful real-time tracking systems. AI can identify a face even with a mask, or track movements by analyzing gait and behavioral patterns. It's constant, inescapable monitoring.
The Five Eyes Alliance really amplifies this. The US, UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand sharing collected data. Even if the US government is legally restricted from monitoring its own citizens directly, they can receive that information from their allies. It effectively bypasses privacy laws.
Precisely. And social media platforms are a goldmine for intelligence agencies. All that information about our daily lives, relationships, political leanings, consumption patterns. AI can predict our personality, political orientation, and behavior. Research even showed over 90% accuracy in predicting political leanings just from likes on specific posts. That's a staggering amount of insight.
And financial security and AI auditing come into play. Financial institutions tracking transactions to understand economic activities and consumption. When you withdraw money or make a purchase, your location and activities are tracked. AI can misuse this to monitor everyone's economic activities. Combined with smartphone location data, it can map daily routines, who you meet, where you go. If you deviate from your usual pattern, you could be flagged as suspicious.
It's a massive threat to democracy and human rights. Fundamental rights like privacy, freedom of expression, and assembly are being constrained. Political opponents and activists face intense surveillance, suppressing healthy debate and criticism. It erodes the checks and balances essential to democracy.
And it's not just the U.S. This AI surveillance tech is spreading globally. Israel's Lavender, China's Skynet, the U.S.'s Palantir, they're being adopted worldwide. Developing countries can import these at a low cost, strengthening control over their citizens. This coincides with a global trend of democratic regression.
Right. And EU tried to regulate it with the EU AI Act in March 2024, which classifies AI systems by risk. It bans unacceptable risks and has strict requirements for high-risk systems. But even that law has loopholes. It completely excludes AI used in defense and provides exceptions for national or public security surveillance in the private sector.
So even the most progressive attempts at regulation have blind spots when it comes to state power. And Asia is seeing rapid adoption, too. Singapore with 110,000 surveillance cameras nationwide using facial recognition. They say it's for public safety, but privacy and free expression concerns are valid.
The Middle East is active too. Saudi Arabia using Israel's Pegasus, UAE importing Chinese tech for citizen and foreigner monitoring, and China itself providing surveillance tech to 22 African countries through safe city projects. Ethiopia with Huawei built a nationwide system with facial recognition and location tracking, which has reportedly been used against political opponents and journalists.
And India's Aadhaar system, collecting biometric data from over 1.3 billion citizens, fingerprints, iris scans, and facial recognition. It's an identification tool for social security, finance, communication, but the potential for government surveillance is huge.
Here in South Korea, the NIS hacking program controversy from 2015 with Hacking Team. The NIS was a regular customer, acquiring spyware that could monitor all activities on mobile phones and computers, real-time collection of calls, texts, emails, browser history, location. They claimed it was for countering North Korean cyber attacks, but the lack of transparency was really concerning.
It all comes down to the grave threats of AI surveillance. The first big problem is the mass collection of personal data without consent, like Israel's Lavender system, which collected and analyzed information from most of Gaza's 2.3 million residents, or China's forced facial information collection.
It violates the fundamental right to self-determination over personal information. People should have the right to know who uses their data, when, and why, and to consent or refuse. But AI surveillance systems just ignore these rights, collecting everything from location to gait patterns.
And there's the issue of opaque algorithms and the possibility of error. We don't know how these systems work. Lavender's algorithm training methods aren't clear, and a system making life or death decisions is shrouded in secrecy. Transparency is crucial in a democratic society, especially for automated decisions affecting individual rights.
And they're not perfect. Lavender's 10% error rate means innocent civilians